Mapping Doctors is an NIHR-funded multidisciplinary research project at Lancaster University. A quick disclaimer, this study is funded by the NIHR, but the views expressed are those of the members of the team and are not necessarily those of the NIHR or the Department of Health and Social Care. Hello and welcome to the Mapping Doctors podcast. My name is Ewan Lawson, and I'm a GP and Senior Clinical Lecturer at Lancaster Medical School. Each of these podcasts explores an area of the work we're doing with various members of the team. And in this episode, I am joined by Dr. Liz Brewster and Dr. Cliff Shelton, and I'll get them to introduce themselves. Liz.
Hi, I'm Liz Brewster. I am the PI for the Mapping Doctors Project, and I'm a Senior Lecturer at Lancaster Medical School.
And my name's Cliff Shelton. I'm an academic consultant anaesthetist, and I split my time between Wythenshawe Hospital in Manchester and Lancaster Medical School.
So today we want to talk about geography, location, location, location. I'm going to come to you, Cliff, first of all. And I wonder if you could just give us a little bit of a background about medical training and place. Do doctors just train in the same place? Do they move around? Try and give us, if you can, a little bit of a feel for how it is to come to go through the system.
I think training as a doctor is kind of notoriously mobile, to walk through it from the first day at medical school up to being, say, a consultant or a general practitioner or a specialist doctor. When you go to medical school, that's generally based in a city, a university, and most medical schools will have partnerships with some large hospitals in their local area. Me, for example, I went to medical school in Manchester, and we had a choice of three big hospitals that we could go to. And each of those big hospitals had several smaller hospitals that we could be sent to train in something specific. So over the course of the 5 years that you spend at medical school, you might find your way through, I don't know, three or four different hospitals spread across an area of, I don't know, in the case of Manchester, it might be sort of 30 or 40 miles away from the city centre itself. When you finish medical school, you go off and do something called foundation training. That is based at a single hospital, although it's commonplace to go and do a community placement, for example, in a local general practitioner's. So not too much moving around once you're there, but you also don't have a great deal of decision making, particularly lately, in terms of where you actually end up for your foundation training. So for me, there was a bit of uncertainty about where I would actually be having that first clinical job. And thereafter, you might choose to do, some specialised clinical training. And what gets talked about is rotations. So again, to use my own example, training in the northwest of England, the places that I trained, it's described as the Manchester rotation, but Manchester's actually right at the south of it. And it goes up as far as the bottom of the Lake District. You know, that's quite a big sort of geographical sort of section of the country. And it's very common for people to move the whole length and breadth of a what's called a deanery, an area where people train. And I think there's a kind of concept of fairness within that. So, you know, when I spoke to the people who looked after my training, it was kind of explained to me that whilst I could expect to be near to home for some of the time, it was kind of one of those things that was part of the deal that I'd be sent to one of the further away hospitals for, you know, every year or so, and so would everybody else. So lots of moving around, and really the time when you get to maybe settle down permanently is when you find a job that doesn't involve rotations. So that might be as a consultant, could be as a general practitioner, or it might be as a doctor employed by a hospital in another role, for example, a specialty or specialist doctor or a locally employed doctor.
It's quite an important point, isn't it? Because, as you say, highly mobile training pathways, and where you fetch up once you've been through that kind of washing machine tumble process is often where you might then end up as a consultant, as a GP in the long term. One of the things that's really interesting is this, obviously we're concerned about there being the right number of doctors in the right places. One of the areas that people have looked to in recent times is to create new medical schools and to put them in places where there have been fewer doctors, in the idea that that will solve the crisis. I wonder if you could talk to that a little bit, Liz.
it is interesting because there's this statistic that kind of goes around that roughly says that most students stay within about 50 miles of where they originally went to medical school or train.
Can I just ask before you go further, is that a real statistic, Liz, or is it a bit of a zombie one? Do we know how reliable, because that is one that's quite notorious as received wisdom. And I wonder if it's just worth a quick kind of digression just to ask if that is actually a genuinely solid bit of evidence or if it's just one of those number zombie statistics that keeps coming back.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to trace it down a little bit because it varies if people say 50 miles or 50 kilometers, and so you start to ask yourself, where did this come from? It is the statistic that NHS Workforce Training Education use at the moment, and so when they're talking about the work that they're actually trying to do to make the system a bit fairer and to redistribute some of the training numbers that are associated with medical roles, that's what they're trying to think about a little bit as well, because that is the kind of basis on which they are doing their workforce planning at the moment. So it's hard to know exactly where it came from and when it started to be used, but it is widely used at the moment.
Okay, yeah, thanks. I think it was worth just digressing into that quickly. But so is it the answer to all of our problems, putting new medical schools in underdotted areas, Liz?
I don't think it's going to entirely solve those localised workforce crises that we see at the moment. And I don't think it's as simple as that. It's important, I think, for people to get experience in an area and to, you know, be familiar with it. Maybe it's somewhere they've not been before, so they start to think, oh gosh, maybe I could settle down here. But also it has to kind of follow through into the training places that are available. So one of the things that we see locally is that people can do quite specialised training in local hospitals until they reach a certain level, but then the skills and experiences that they need to get signed off to finish their training aren't available locally because the services aren't there. And so they have to go somewhere else for their final elements of their training. So we talk about ST6 and ST7 and ST8. And that's at that point that they go somewhere else and then they settle down in that place rather than settling down in the area that the medical school is in. So I think there's a lot of different kind of pieces in the puzzle that people need to think about, not just where to put a medical school.
Cliff, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about this idea about the impact on the doctor of moving around. And, you know, and people want to live in nice places. They want to be able to look after their family. They want to work in nice hospitals where, or GP practice where they feel there's a good working culture. And also that perhaps might be set against working in areas where there's more deprivation or lots of challenges. What sort of control do doctors have? What's the experience of that like?
So to take that piece by piece, I mean, what's it like rotating round? I would say it's definitely a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, you just kind of can't get around the fact that it's inconvenient for your life. So you've got a few different options, haven't you? If you live in a place and you're sent to work in a different place, you can either move house, you can find some temporary accommodation there, which could be, for example, you could rent a flat, it's expensive, you could live in the hospital accommodation there, which is not known for its luxury, but, you know, it is tends to be cheaper and obviously it's on site, but it's really disruptive. The other thing you could do is you could commute you know, when you're working long shifts and, you know, with kind of antisocial hours and so, that's not a trivial thing. So unfortunately, all of us know people who have come to harm or even been killed in traffic accidents on the way back on long commutes from distant working places. And I think it's a real, it makes you pause for thought, doesn't it, that that's an occupational hazard of doing a job where you look after people. So there's lots of downsides to it, and just bearing in mind that when you're certainly a doctor in training, your job isn't just to look after people, but it's to learn how to be the next kind of doctor you're going to be. Spending 2 hours plus on the road every day probably isn't the most constructive way to use your time. But having said that, different hospitals work differently. You do need to be able to figure out, you know, what kind of doctor you want to be and learn from lots of different types of people. You need to work with lots of different types of patients. You need to see lots of different types of clinical things. And you also need to find the place where you want to work. And so if I think about what I got that was beneficial from my rotation or rotations, I got to sort of take the little bits of practice from all of my mentors and tutors that I really liked and sort of built that into me as a more finished product. And I got to work with an incredibly diverse group of colleagues and patients. And I think that's made me a better consultant at the end of the day. And I did also get to find the place where I wanted to work. I think if I'd never rotated to the hospital where I now work, I wouldn't have just put in a random job application here one day and turned up to try to be a consultant. So I've got really mixed feelings about it. It's got pros and it's got cons, but if you look to alter it, you do run the risk that, you know, you might make one thing better and make another thing worse. But in terms of the amount of control you've got, to be fair, you do have some control over it. So the people who run training programs, training program directors, tend to get into those roles because they like education and they like helping people to succeed. And if they're, you know, if somebody makes a sort of reasonable representation as to why they might need to work in a certain place for a period of time, they will tend to endeavour to meet those requests. But at the end of the day, they've got to help the patients, and you have to spread the doctors in training out appropriately to meet the needs of those people. So I don't really envy their jobs, because on the one hand, they are genuinely desperate to help their resident doctors. But on the other hand, they're also desperate to help their patients. And those things don't always pull in the same direction.
One aspect that would be worth just touching on, Liz, in the time we've left, is a little bit about training in smaller places as well. Because obviously, as you're rotating around, you look, my experience, big teaching hospitals, tertiary centres even. But you'll also experience smaller, maybe perhaps district general hospitals. And thinking from the hospital perspective, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit to that.
I am really fascinated by this question, and that's partly because of some of the hospitals that we work with at Lancaster Medical School, who might be considered to be a bit smaller. They have a lot of things that they can offer, I think, in terms of the curriculum and the teaching that they do. But sometimes it seems a bit like places have reputations established. If they're a bit smaller, or they're kind of not a specialist or tertiary centre, maybe they've got the reputation that they are not going to have as up-to-date teaching methods, or they're not going to provide as many experiences. So people are going to struggle to get their skills and competencies signed off. But actually, there's quite a lot of evidence that suggests that training in smaller places can be really nice for people, because you get to know people better, you're kind of part of a smaller team, so you get more time in terms of your development, and there are potentially opportunities to kind of, you know, step up and see things and observe things that you might not necessarily get in a bigger tertiary hospital. So in our data, in our interview data, sometimes people talk about this idea of, you know, wanting to be a big fish in a small pond rather than kind of floating around in a big hospital and not no one knowing who they are and why they're there. So I think there's really interesting benefits that are perhaps sometimes people are a bit scared to go to smaller hospitals or hospitals on the periphery, on the coast and what have you. But there's some real benefits to be had there.
Yeah, I mean, I've trained in some smaller hospitals and, you know, and hospitals that don't have brilliant reputations, but I've always had positive experiences in those kinds of places. But I think what you've said, Liz, is sort of rings true with my experience, that you're often afforded a bit more responsibility as a doctor who's following a training program in those places. And that's a good thing, as long as it's backed up with an appropriate amount of support. So the thing that makes the difference, in my view, between like constructively having a bit more responsibility and that being quite scary for the doctor and also probably not brilliant for the patient, is knowing that the person who's on call and is supervising you is really there and they've got your back, and if you pick up the phone, they're going to be in to come and look after you. And you do tend to find smaller hospitals that are very good at that. And I think the reason they can do it is that often the caseload, certainly in anaesthetics where I work, is a bit less complicated. And so they feel, the consultants and the supervisors feel a bit less compelled to kind of hover around and always be there. And it is very hard, you know, when you're supervising somebody and you're right there, you have to work very hard not to constantly intervene and kind of micromanage somebody. Whereas sometimes learners need to take that next step and need to do things with a degree of independence, albeit within a safe framework. And so I think I completely agree. And I really, really value the time that I've spent training in maybe the less glamorous, smaller hospitals. And again, I think it's, you know, given me a lot that I now apply as a clinician working in a relatively big place, as I do now.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Well, geography is a complicated issue, complex, lots of different factors and lots of training pathway matters as well. And we haven't even touched on some of the changes to foundation year allocations, and we won't go there today. That might be one for another episode. Both, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.